This is Relocalizing Vermont here on WGDR Plainfield. I'm Carl Ettenayer, and we're going to be talking about extempo storytelling last night at the Black Door. You know, this relocalizing idea, it's about getting parking and other land and transportation issues right. It's about finding local sources for food, energy, materials, finding ways to replace our dependence on federal dollars, global transportation system. It's also about entertainment. If we turn off our TVs and we listen to each other's music and to each other's stories, we knit a stronger community and we become better here at producing music, producing stories. And one of the key instigators of good storytelling here in the area is Jen Dole, who organized and hosted Extempo last night at the Black Door. She also organizes trivia nights and naked bicycle rides in Montpelier. She now joins us on the phone to introduce the concept of Extempo. Jen, welcome to the show.
Hi, Carl. Good morning. Thanks very much for having me on.
Could you start off by telling us what Extempo is and what inspired you to host it?
Sure. Extempo is short for the word extemporaneous, which Webster's has it as carefully prepared but delivered without notes or text. And so what Extempo is a live original storytelling event in which people get up and tell true first-person stories from their own lives without using any cheat sheets.
And what inspired you to start up Extempo here?
Well, storytelling, of course, goes back probably as far as the first human, and it's interesting that that's become in vogue right now with certainly events like The Moth. Everybody knows that one that's on the radio and in New York City. So I think that it's kind of something from our past that we come by very honestly as human beings that happens to be back in vogue.
Maybe you could explain, in case some people, like me, don't know what The Moth is, what that is.
Sure. It's a similar type of thing. It is live original storytelling. I believe the fellow who started it, I want to say he's from Georgia, but it ended up becoming popular in New York City, and it is a similar but different event from Extempo. And there are a lot of these types of things. The Moth just happens to be probably the most well-known one because it gets a fair amount of radio play. But there are in major cities across the U.S., all sorts of live original storytelling events, of which Extempo is one.
And you have a website for the Vermont version of this.
We do, yes. That's at www.extempovt.com.
www.extempovt.com. There are lots of rules that you read off at the beginning of the night last night. Did you find that the storytellers generally follow them?
They do. Actually, it's funny. I was going back over the notes from last night, and one of our rules is that being extemporaneous storytelling and not impromptu, that the storytellers actually have to practice in advance.
Mm.
And part of that practice involves trying to hit a time mark, and that is 5 minutes. And as I flip back through the notes, the timekeeper kept very good notes last night, and I noticed of the 11 storytellers that we had, that 6 of those 11, or most of them, were in that 5-minute range.
Mm-hmm.
So people take that seriously, which is good. It's sort of extra incentive to practice because it's not just to make certain that you know what you're going to say. It's that you can hit your mark as well.
I was talking to one woman there who attended and had practiced a number of times, and she found that she had not succeeded in paring it down to be within the time limit. So she was sitting it out and going to follow that rule and come back the next time.
Yes, that certainly happens. People have to kind of summon their internal editor and decide what's really vital about the story and what isn't.
Mm.
And the other thing that happens is even folks who practice and say, okay, fine, I got it to 4 minutes and 59 seconds, oftentimes don't account for the additional time that it takes when you have to pause if the audience is laughing or applauding or stops to give you some sort of feedback that tacks the seconds on. But we're not too hardcore about it. We just want to make certain that nobody is going on and on and on and is still up there after, say, 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And this was a third one that you've done in this series, is that correct?
That's right. We've been going every couple of months, every other month, thereabouts, and we started in, I think the first event was in March.
It was pretty crowded up there at the third floor of the Black Door last night. Has it been growing over time in attendance?
It was. The first two, I would estimate, probably had just over 50 people, and I would say last night, certainly over 60. It might have even been more than that, but it's always been standing room only to some extent, but last night was even tough to move around.
Hmm. Anything you'd like to see happen to the Extempo event as it develops?
Well, the most important thing is that people participate in some way, whether you choose to practice and get up and tell a story from your own life, or if you just choose to volunteer to be on the jury who listens to and evaluates the stories and comes up with some winners at the end of the evening. Participation is the most important thing. So when I say that we definitely want to grow Extempo, what I mean is that it's always going to be more important for people to come to Extempo who are willing to be the entertainment and not just wanting to be entertained.
Very good. Jen Dole organizes the Extempo Storytelling Nights at the Black Door every couple months or so. ExtempoVT.com is a website. Do you have a schedule for the next one yet, Jen?
The next one's not set in stone, but I would definitely go to the website and check out when it might be occurring. And a really good guess is we'll probably squeeze one more event in around November, December time, maybe about that halfway point in between the holidays, something right around there.
I signed up on the email notification list, so keep your dial tuned to WGDR, and I'll let you know when the next one is coming up. Jen Dole, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Carl.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
So the top honors last night were taken by Otto Trautz for his story Catwoman, and Rob Squire for his story Searching for God on Rodeo Drive. Those are both in the second half of the show. I stuck around only for the first half and recorded those, came home and edited them for you. But we do have, which we'll play later on, a story from Otto Trautz from the June 22nd version of Extempo. That story is called Thank You, Thief. First off, though, we're going to listen to Maggie Mae Anderson with a story that tied for honorable mention with Charles O'Connor's story, Robert Space Son. Maggie Mae Anderson's story is There Is No Moral to This Story.
I was asleep in my lover's arms. I was 20 years old, in love for the very first time in my life. So in love, in fact, that I quit my job early in the Adirondack Mountains and flew to Colorado to spend 10 days with John during his fall break from school. My first 3 days in Colorado had been this glorious mixture of high elevation lightheadedness and the intoxication of young love. And I think that combination has something to do with why I was so confused when in the middle of the night I heard, Maggie, there's somebody here for you. And I woke up and was kind of confused. We were staying with our friends, Megan and Wes, in their basement apartment. They had just moved in. And I still didn't understand it. I heard again, Maggie, are you getting up? There's somebody here for you. And I started to pull on John's dirty Carhartts and this flannel shirt that had the sleeves ripped off and half the buttons were missing, and I covered myself, and I followed Wes out into the bright lights of the living room. And it was then that I realized, wait, it's the middle of the night. It was still dark. And for some reason, I had thought that he told me that there was a phone call for me. And I thought I was following him to a phone, but he walked me to the front door. And then it kind of sunk in that he had said with quite a bit of urgency, there's somebody here for you. Instead of reaching for the doorknob, I pulled the curtain back. It was a uniformed police officer. I dropped the curtain, looked at Wes, and whispered, I haven't even gotten high in this state yet. What's going on? And he just shrugged his shoulders. I opened the door. Are you Maggie Anderson? Yes, officer? You need to call home. Excuse me? You're Maggie Anderson, right? Yes. Uh-huh. You need to call home. Do you need to ring to a telephone? And I looked at Wes, who already was starting to go up the stairs and wake up his neighbors who had been woken up by the officer in the first place. And I was so confused, and I looked at him and said, well, what's going on? Do you know what's happening? It's not good. And the next few minutes to this day are still a bit of a blur, as I was handed a phone and I was trying to do the math in my head. Colorado, Connecticut, what's the time difference? It's not even 6:30 back there. What's going on? And I called my dad's number, and my dad answered, and, Pop, what's happening? And all he could get out was two words. Tim's gone. And my father, who my entire life had been this lumberjack, somewhat severe, but a sturdy man, sobbed. And the memories of those sobs to this day still make my bone marrow ache with sorrow. Tim's gone. Tim's gone. That's all he could say. And then I hear sobs and hyperventilating, and I'm on the phone, and, oh my God, what do I do? What do I do? I'm in Colorado. What do I do? What do I do? And just come home, come home, come home. And I swear to God, we only said those words to each other. And I wasn't even registering that he had told me his funeral plans. Since he was about 16, he had been telling me his funeral plans. And I should have been telling my dad. I should have been saying, no, Mom's making the wrong plans right now. But I didn't. I just hung up the phone. And I sat there. And then this movie played in front of my eyes. Because wasn't it 6 days earlier that I had driven down from the Adirondacks and bounded up my mother's steps and jumped into his arms because I'd missed my brother so much. Been away all summer, and he's my soulmate. We finished other sentences. And I thought it was so kind of him, so brotherly love, that he had organized a whole weekend of us, two of the youngest cousins of 25 cousins in a big Italian family. And we went and had pizza with one family, brunch with another, ice cream with another. I thought it was just a great bonding family thing. How had I been so naive? How had I not seen that for what it was? How had I not known? How did I not get the message? And then he had insisted that he be the one to bring me to the airport. He alone bring me to the airport. This is 1995. So we get there, I've forgotten my license, and he sweet-talks the desk agent into letting me on, even though I don't have a license, and convincing him that, yes, she is my sister. She's Sue. She says she is. And he's able to walk me to the gate. And we sit, and we laugh, and we talk. And I didn't really want to leave, even though I was so in love and so couldn't wait to get to see John. I was enjoying my brother. Final call, final boarding, big hug. And then he backed up, and he mimicked our great Uncle Muchie, this old paisan man who would shake your hand and say, I can't take it with me, so I might as well give it to the ones I love. And he palmed me a $20 bill. Came to find out that was the last $20 he had. So now all of a sudden, I'm back sitting on a bench that's filled with ski hats and gloves, and my friends are at the bottom of these basement stairs in their apartment, not knowing. And I walk down and I say, Tim's dead. And my knees give out, and they all catch me. And like an amoeba, they kind of transport me over to the couch and sit me down. And I remember asking, what date is it? Like I would ever be able to forget. My brother's name is Timothy Harold Anderson, but all of us call him Ducky. And his birthday's tomorrow. Oh. He would have been 39 years old. And he took his own life 3 days after I got to Colorado. And there's absolutely no moral to the story. I just thank you all for listening, because it's a story of my life.
That was Maggie Mae Anderson last night at the Extempo Night at the Black Door. The name of the story was There Is No Moral to This Story. So today, September 2nd, would have been the birthday of her brother Tim. Now we'll listen to Beth Brandt, How I Came to Move to Vermont.
My bones are fusing, and for about 20 years, from the time I was 8, about every 4 years, I'd have symptomatic flare-ups, which would put me in a wheelchair or on crutches for sometimes up to a year. In the in-between years, I'd really make up for lost time. I really liked to hike and bike and cross-country ski and camp. The year I turned 18 was a good year. I spent the summer hiking and camping in the White Mountains with my cousin, and then I went off to college in upstate New York. And about mid-February, I got this hankering to go spend the night in the woods. I had a tent, and I could cross-country ski out to the site, and hopefully trust my good to 40 below sleeping bag to do its job. And the night I chose to do this was also the night that Buddy Guy and Junior Wells were playing at the college. on campus. So my friends and I were all planning to have dinner and go to the concert before I went and spent the night in the woods. Well, we were planning to have dinner, and we in our dorm, we made dinner. We tried to make dinner. We started to play this game called Botticelli, and we drank copious amounts of wine. And I don't think I remember eating dinner that night, but about an hour or so before the concert was to start, or we were to go, I ambled into the lounge of the dorm to check out the scene there, which comprised a single, rather hairy guy lacing up his hiking boots. Well, it was the 70s, and pretty much everybody wore hiking boots or work boots. So there was nothing about this particular scene that would indicate that either hiking or anything particularly outdoorsy was intended. However, I think because he smelled really good, he smelled like wood smoke, I said to him, "Do you live in the woods?" And very oddly, remember this was upstate New York, mid-February, he said, "Yes, I do. I live in a teepee." Well, at this point, I was so drunk that I had slid down the wall that was holding me up, and I was sitting splay-legged in front of this guy who was about to change the course of my life, as it turned out. He was a visiting professor, he was a ceramics professor, glassblowing professor at the college. And he was also running the Buddy Guy and Junior Wells show that night. So he had come to the dorm to take a shower, because the TV didn't have such facilities. And he was lacing up his boots to go put on the show, and he said, "Do you want free tickets?" And he said, "Do you want to then ski out to..." Oh, I told him. He said, "I live in a teepee in the woods." And he pointed out to the woods where I was planning to spend the night. So, of course, I had to tell him that. And he said, "Do you want to spend the night, ski out to the teepee and spend the night at my teepee?" So we made arrangements to meet at my dorm room after the concert. And I skied back out to the teepee with him. So my friends and I went to the concert with our free tickets. How I walked there, I have no idea. We had a really good time, and I made it back to the dorm room, and I figured this was never going to happen. 2 a.m, he's going to come and pick me up on the way. So I passed out, and he came, and we went out to the teepee. We became very good friends, and this guy was a very good-looking guy, and the girls at the college were very crazy about him. And so I became his beard, and everybody thought we were a couple, and sort of fended off the girls. And summer came, and I went back to Boston, and he moved to Plainfield, Vermont, where he was establishing a glassblowing studio. And the racial tensions in Boston in the 70s were pretty hot, and busing was the issue, and I was really ready to get out of the city. And my hairy, teepee-dwelling glassblower friend said, who was now living in a yurt, said, "Why don't you move to Plainfield, Vermont to live in my teepee?" Which is what I did 37 years ago. Now, the rest of the story is my friend, the hairy glass-blowing teepee dweller, is Josh Simpson, who's one of the best-known glass-blowers in the world. And he's known a lot for these planets that he makes. He was very into planets, meteorites, tektites, anything to do with space. He was absolutely obsessed. Well, over the years, he continued to use me as his beard. And the last time was about 20 years ago. And he was fending off an ardent pursuer by telling her he was going to visit me, when in reality, he was going to visit Katie Coleman, whom he later married. Katie Coleman is an astronaut who's been in space 3 times. So my hairy, teepee-dwelling, glass-blowing planet maker married an astronaut. And I still live within 30 miles of my teepee site.
Beth Brandt from last night's storytelling at the Black Door, How I Came to Move to Vermont. For our final story, we'll hear one from a person who tied for top honors last night, Otto Trautz, with his story Catwoman. We don't have a recording of that for you yet, but he also tied for top honors at the June 22nd event with his story, Thank You, Thief.
So let's call this story, Thank You, Thief. It's 1967. I'm a graduate student living in an undergraduate dorm, sort of a proctor. And among my duties, one is self-assigned, and that is every Thursday night at midnight to go down to the pool which is in the basement of this part of the dorm, and chase people out. And this seemed like a good idea because quarter past midnight, the night watchman comes around. And he probably wouldn't approve of what goes on down there. Probably would report it to the housemaster, and that'd be the end of the fun. So Thursday comes along, and I go down at midnight. And the rule on Thursday is informal. It's swimsuits optional. So I go down at midnight, and there are people in the pool, and I chase them out and fish out a couple of Chianti bottles floating in the pool, clean up around the pool a bit. And this girl climbs out, very pretty girl, looks around, distressed to find that someone stole her clothes. And they stole her towel. She doesn't have anything. I look around, there's nothing around the pool. So I say, wait here. Of course she's going to wait there. And I run upstairs to my room. I grab a coat and come down, and she puts the coat on. And only have a few minutes before the night watchman comes along. So I say, run up to my room. Let's go. So we run up, and we run through the lobby. And there's a kid standing there with his parents. And so what they see is this guy running and this girl with wet hair and barefoot with a coat on chasing him up the stairs. And so we get to my room, and she says she wants to take a shower. And I said, well, you're just in the pool. She said, well, yeah, I need to get the chlorine out of my hair. So she goes in the shower, talking the whole time. I'm thinking, what's going to happen next? I bet that she's going to ask me if I want to join her in the shower. And then I'm thinking, well, even if she doesn't ask me if I want to join her in the shower, I'll ask her if she wants me to join her in the shower. So things are looking really good. And I'm walking towards the bathroom, and I look out the window. And my car, my 1960 Austin Healey, which I still have, is parked out front. And there are these two guys messing with the car. One guy's in the car. The car was stolen the year before. It was a miracle I got it back, so I didn't hesitate. I ran outside, and there's a bystander there. And he and I start yelling at these guys, and they run away. And I get in the car, make sure it's okay, and it starts. Everything's fine. And I come back upstairs to my room, and she's waiting for me. She's waiting for me to take her home. She's got the coat on, and she says, I think I better go home. And I say, you sure you want to go home? She says, yeah, I better get home. Can you take me? I said, well, yeah, I guess so. Where do you live? Well, a couple blocks off campus. So we get down in the car and drive her home, and she says, wait a minute, no. Bring your coat back. She goes upstairs and gets dressed and brings the coat back, and I drive back to my dorm, and after hitting my head on the wall for 15 minutes or so, I go to sleep. And during the next week, I find out that she's the wife of one of my grad school classmates. And I come to know this guy, and he's a really nice guy, and we become great friends. So looking back, I want to say to the guys who stole her clothes, thank you, thief. And to the guys who almost stole my car, thank you, thief.
Thank you. That was Otto Trautz at the Black Door Storytelling Night, June 22nd, similar program to the one last night. I'm Carl Etnayer. This has been Relocalizing Vermont here on WGDR Plainfield.